formal process for...
I'm sorry?
Is there a formal process for organizations or groups to become part of the process?
Yeah, I was going to join up with this. I think that by next spring or summer, the pilot projects will get announced, and then the easiest, you know, that's sort of like phase two testing on a new drug or something like that. If you think you're dying of the disease anyway, you go get yourself in on the phase two test. So that those will be announced, and then you start getting friendly to whoever those five players are, would be one way. Another is, I think, to in your own deliberations with the ideas that you're coming up with out of this body of people in this organization, think about how it would blend in with this, and then and basically offer that. I think there's a good chance that this is the way that things will go, because it is ecumenical against a whole lot of things, including specific technologies of preservation, emulation, migration, and so on, that it will be uncommonly welcoming and hopefully pretty robust against a lot of different ideas, a lot of different organizations. And part of Library Congress's job is going to be, and they understand this, to make this a very easy process to join. And part of what I'll lobby them with coming from groups like this is make it easy to join early rather than late, if that would work for you.
Can I just add, Library Congress being what it is, a federal agency spending your money on this project, will be conducting, or says it will be conducting an RFP to establish those selected programs. So that RFP, I'm told, is written for the interview hours on that spring.
Yeah. Fair enough, Dan.
Just go and select somebody, but yeah.
Yep. Send them stuff you want to try, stuff you want to do. Probably groups you want to collaborate with is apt to be attractive.
You did send Laura Campbell, or she the right person?
Laura Campbell's exactly the right person to deal with. So stay clear in view of her during this process is I think the right thing to do. Right here.
This is more of a comment than a question. I just wanted to thank you for saying that institutions preserve rather than technology. I think that's sort of a motto that should be underscored for this group. And it brings to mind a conversation that, I have this conversation about twice a year with colleagues who point out, people who work in more traditional literary fields will say, well, I can read an old English manuscript, right? I can walk into the British Library and, find the manuscript available. And, well, in fact, that's not true. They can't do that because there are poor people in the world who have access to that manuscript. And the reason that the manuscript still exists is because it's been kept in climate-controlled vaults. So I think that's a really apropos lesson for us.
Yep, I agree. And it's also important for the technology people to hear that the solution is not entirely theirs. Yeah.
One question is this tension in an initiative like this between, on the one hand, making sure that commercial stuff is preserved, which companies have often not done a good job at preserving it. But on the other hand, the more you make available a secure rights management control or cryptographically controlled environment, the more it seems that the private companies can externalize to the public the job of keeping their profit-making materials. Mm-hmm. And given the fact that they have never failed to extend copyright over those materials, and given the fact that whatever the budget is, it will be a limited budget,
right,
but be on the public side, what institutions or initiatives or rhetorics have you seen in there to stop the danger that this basically becomes a shifting of private costs onto the public fist, which would then eat up a large portion of the money available, so that we end up saving their material for them to which we have no access?
Is this a case where the public's going to wind up paying basically for the total privatizing of all data? And there would be the truly perverse result of this if that happened. I think the reality is going to be that quite a lot of these certified repositories will be digital repositories, will be private. But part of being certified will be taking on responsibilities for access by scholars in some cases, because it is the Library of Congress, after all, who's been pushing this whole thing, to backups that are not necessarily totally owned and operated by the private sector, but it's way dark. If they go away and all that stuff goes into confusion the way so many things do, because commercial entities disappear, it can be recovered. And so I think part of the building social contract over the next 20 years is going to be what do we expect from the various players in terms of both their rights and especially their responsibilities in order to play in this game.
Just one very brief follow-up. I think that's a good idea, and I definitely see the tension. The one sort of tragic irony is there was a single good argument. Was ultimately a single potentially good argument that was made in favor of copyright term extension, which was quite a very limited number of works, which was we need you to extend the term so that we can digitize fragile film, which is basically turning into powder. And only by extending the term you give us the incentive to do that. And that was the only argument that was made to Congress that in any way connected to Congress's copyright power in any conceivable ludicrous way. It turned out to be false, but it was at least potentially not false. And the danger I see in this is that having kind of made that argument in order to get the term extension, if the further up one moves in your hierarchy, the more you move up from repository towards collection and so forth,
right,
the more you're actually then taking on the very thing for which we have, so to speak, already paid them,
right,
through a copyright term extension. And to the extent that that point could be made, in that they themselves ask for the extension so that they themselves can do this, and when they come to you, which they will, and say, you have to pay for this, they have already been paid by the public to do this at a massive cost to 20th century culture, and it would be nice for that point to be made occasionally in the debate. But
I think one of the things this whole system is going to do is, you know, by acknowledging that preservation is a matter of institutions and that most of the preservation apparatus is going to go on at the level of the collections in this layout, this is the time to sort of have a constitutional convention. You know, as we take on serious preservation of digital materials and agreeing on a set of institutions and protocols and fast-moving technologies to handle this, now's the time to say what kind of basic agreements about the handling of this information do we want over time. And the advantage you've got here is because this effort is taking the long term, 200 years plus, as the frame of reference, you're forcing everybody into basically the library and archival frame of reference. If they want to play in this game, they need to think like an archive. And thinking like an archive involves finessing some of the issues that you raise. So I would see this as an opportunity to revisit the whole intellectual property ballgame and to try to leverage from the start a much more equitable outcome. Yeah.
I'm interested in going to the point of this constitutional convention. I'm interested in the constituency building.
Constituency building.
Yeah, I'm amazed that Congress appropriated as much as it did, and maybe there's something that can be learned from that. And I was wondering if there's anything you might be able to share with us in that legislative process.
I've not been part of the dickering with Congress about this, so I don't know the ins and outs of why they thought it was a terrific idea. You know, every now and then they do their job. What can I say? Over here.
I wanted to ask if you had some insights on a sort of extension of this project, because I know the charge here is to preserve digital information, you know, to see how we can retrieve sequences of bits in this repository, we can display various sorts of media. And yet, you know, one of our concerns here is how to give people access really to systems.
How do they what?
To systems rather than to information. A piece like some of the literature works, like Williamson's Public Hotel or
I was with Lori last week hiking.
Yep.
We couldn't preserve her hike either.
And it's just the issue is, you know, with this system in place, it still doesn't address the issue of how to actually use an interactive system that is stored as a sequence of bits.
Correct.
So that, you know, that's one of the things that, although this is an essential aspect of any program to try to save those systems, I'm wondering what extensions, you know, this could be made to allow us to tackle problems like that, works like that.
I think one of the reasons this system has flipped an intractable problem into a tractable solution is that it, to some extent, doesn't try to solve that problem. It provides tools which can help provide an environment where that problem can be solved. And so basically the collections and organizations like this will need to solve that problem. How can you know, basically whole data systems be completely revivable and lived in? And once you'll find ways of doing that, I'm confident, and that will blend in with the system very comfortably. But be glad the system isn't trying to solve your problem, because it would break. I think one of the things which will attract Library of Congress for both the pilot programs and for, you know, the early adopters is a wide variety of difficult problems being where this set of tools is helpful for it. So if you go in with a difficult problem, but you think you've got an avenue toward solution, and you think this architecture can be part of that solution, that makes your approach more attractive. It's not the easy ones, you know, it's the hard ones that make the design work. Yeah.
You spoke a lot about the institutions for the preservation work. Meanwhile, the institutions for the production of work are breaking down or changing or morphing in mathematical ways. You spoke of weblogs, for example. That material that is produced is not filtered through or selected or triaged by the institutional publisher on a traditional storage. Is there a fundamental mismatch between the kind of institution building you're talking about, maybe collection and preservation on the one hand, and sort of entropy and deregulation of the production apparatus that used to take on our responsibility for triaging and selecting what gets to survive?
Well, at least with the web logs and a lot of the extremely evanescent and transient material that appears on the web, that's what Brewster Kahle and the Internet Archive has attempted to just step up to and say, well, just collect it all. One of the reasons Long Now Foundation has a wonderful computer scientist named Kurt Mollucker, who is deeply interested in all of this and involved in it, is he was going to work with preservation with Brewster, and Brewster pondered on preservation. He realized he was not going to be able to do both collection and preservation, so he's going to collect, and then it's up to the rest of us to help figure out, you know, all the intellectual property stuff which would otherwise put him in jail, and all of the ways of keeping it accessible and linkable and all the rest of it. My time is up. Thank you very much.